here we are. Arthur Gomesh, Reel 4. And Arthur, could I now ask you about your experience of when the garrison surrendered to the Japanese? Am I right in thinking this was on Christmas Day?
It was.
What time were you aware of what was going on? When did you realise?
It was Christmas Day, and it was a fine sunny day. It was in the afternoon, about 3 p.m., when there was a phone call to our commanding officer, giving him instructions that the commander-in-chief had decided to surrender, and we were to lay down our arms where we were, not destroy them, just lay them down, because those were the terms of the surrender. And we were then to march back to the volunteer headquarters in Garden Road. It was a great sense of relief when we heard this, because for the last few days we had been incessantly shelled and bombed. A bomb had fallen among us, killing one, wounding several, and carried our wounded dead out. So we had no supplies coming because of the air raid, continuing air raid in Shelling. So when the lull of the morning until 3 o'clock was a bit surprising to us, and at 3 o'clock when we heard that it was over, it was a sense of relief that we were going to live for another day. We assembled and we marched back most of the way to our headquarters. It was a long way.
How long would it be?
We got some transport. We didn't march all the way. We marched down and we got some transport. And we eventually arrived at the place just opposite the Helena May Institute, where the American Consulate General is now. It was called St. John's Place. There were huts there, and we occupied those huts. The various companies occupied those huts. There was no bedding or anything, just a cement floor. And we just slept there. We were on our own rations. There's about 3 or 4 biscuits and a cup of hot soup for the meal. That lasted 2 or 3 days. There, about 2 days with it. I think it was on the 30th of December that we started the long march. We were a bit worried at first because we heard that they were going to, a rumor that they were going to march us a long, long way. So we were wondering where they were going to march us to. But it was much to our advantage and to theirs, the way they marched us to Shenzhen. We didn't know that we were going to Shenzhen. We started assembling at 7 o'clock in the morning at somewhere in front of the Peak Tram Station and start marching down Garden Road. in front of us were the Royal Navy. Apparently they had all the POWs. They were making a great spectacle for the people of Hong Kong. And they marched us down to Star Ferry. There, we were transported across to Kowloon. It took us 1 hour from Garden Road to reach the Star Ferry because they stopped every few hundred yards for the people to see us, I think. Yeah. We were really miserable.
They were making a spectacle of you, were they?
Right. And when we reached Kowloon, we marched past the Peninsula Hotel. There were some of our families there in the Peninsula Hotel windows looking out at us. Streets. The car was waiting, we were marching down, but people were all lined up to see us. Some were jeering. And we marched, and as I said, every few hundred yards, we stopped to rest. We were quiet. We didn't know what they were doing, but they told us to stop, we had to stop. That was for their press photographs and propaganda and all that. And when we reached a district, when we reached Chamtrey Pool, it was almost dusk. And our first experience of prison and surrender was hunger. We were hungry. And we found Chamtrey Pool barracks. Completely looted. Every inch of wood had been pulled out. Windows had been wrenched out, so that only the bare bricks of the huts remained. They left the roof on mercifully, but there were no doors or windows. And of course, there was nothing in the huts. The barracks were built in the days before we had flushing latrines. So we had dry buckets. We called them honey buckets. And a cart, we had a cart, a two-wheel jar, which is a gun carriage. And we put this about a dozen of these. These are large military buckets, standing about more than 2 feet, about a foot and a half in diameter. Heavy. That's why they were around. We didn't carry them. Nobody wanted to touch them. They were filthy. Our first job was a hygiene job to clear up the mess. Because even the looters, they had pulled out everything, single inch of wood from the toilets, so that it was just partition walls and nothing else. And the buckets, they were filthy, they didn't touch it.
Who would the looters have been?
The looters, of course, must have been the people of Hong Kong. It was a question of survival, because they removed everything that could burn as fuel. They needed the fuel. They had to have some rice, they needed the fuel to cook it.
That march to the camp, Arthur, that long march, stopping every so often and having your photograph taken, and the people, you know, lined up to look at you.
Yes.
Were you very humiliated?
I think we were, but at that time our thoughts were not attitudes or humiliation. We were actually quite resigned to be prisoners of war, and to us to be a prisoner of war was no disgrace. We fought the good fight and we had to surrender. We had no food, no ammunition, and of course no help was coming.
How about the Japanese? How were you treated by the Japanese at this time? You know, when you did your march to the headquarters, did you meet many Japanese?
No, when we marched to the headquarters, we were all under our own command. It was only when we started to march from the down Garden Road that the Japanese soldiers appeared, the conductors.
How did they behave?
They behaved rationally.
Were you, when you were captured, you know, and the surrender came, were you worried about the way you would be treated by the Japanese? Had you heard what had happened in various places?
No. Fortunately, we had heard nothing of what happened in other places. Of course, we were the first place to fall. We were the very first. So that may account for it. We were the first. Hong Kong was the first to fall. We surrendered on the 25th of December, and it was not until 14th of February that Singapore surrendered, and it was not until March that the 24th that the Americans surrendered. So we were the first to surrender. Well, but the first Allied post that was overrun. Our arrival at Champion Point, we had a very good regimental sergeant major who instilled strict discipline on the troops, particularly on such occasion, under such traumatic psychological conditions. Everybody was extremely hungry. Hunger was the, was what was keeping everybody, occupying everybody's mind. We ate at some kind of edible stuff with us. But it was not until the second or third day afterwards that we had learned how to cook rice in bulk. It's very well cooking rice in a small pot, but when you have to cook 100 or 200 pounds of rice at a time in a gasoline drum as a container resting in bricks for a stove, it is a different proposition, especially when none of us had any experience of cooking at all, let alone cooking rice. Because in a cylindrical drum, what is at the bottom would burn to cinders before what in the top is still raw. Soon we learned that you have to boil the water, stir it, and then keep on pouring dry slowly. And of course, it was it required a lot of muscle power to do that as the rice began to cook. So we had strong men at the cookhouse, and of course, they were always well fed, and they were the strongest. And eventually, they were the ones that were shipped away in drafts. He worked in coal mines in Japan.
Could I ask you to tell me, Arthur, about the sort of layout of the camp? Was it a very big place? the camp.
The camp where the British men built his barracks. So we had all the huts for the men, and we had the wash house, and we had the toilets.
And were the different, were the Navy, Army, and Airmen, were you all in together?
We were all in the same camp. We were 5,000 of us in Shimshapur camp. And of course, we were all by our own units. The Canadian lines, the volunteer lines, the Navy lines, the artillery, and so they were all in their own respective groups. That had to be so for organization, because the organization of the camp was such that the bugler will sound and the orderly sergeants will go immediately to the headquarters the office to receive instructions that were issued. And then they will rush back to tell the company commanders what instructions are being issued. And then the company commanders, the orders were usually want 50 men or 20 men to do this kind of a job or to do that kind of a job. Like in camp, began with no work. We were very busy cleaning up the camp. And they wanted to keep the men occupied so that to keep their minds occupied, otherwise they were afraid of problems. So we were told to dismantle bricks and brick on this wall and clean up this place and carry the bricks from A to B. And the other people were told to do the same thing and carry the bricks from B to A. Until the two trucks with bricks met each other in halfway. Hurry up, we want to put our bricks in. Then it was a farce. And it was several months. It was in February when the working parties began. As I said, the first few days in camp, we had no food at all. And we had our medical officers. And all they had was a thermometer to take our temperature, a stethoscope to listen to our hearts, a bottle of iodine to put on any wound. And if you couldn't put iodine on you, you couldn't, nothing to listen to. And you didn't have a temperature, there was nothing he could do.
Were there many wounded?
Hmm?
Were there many wounded?
Yes, but the wounded were in hospital, in Bowling Military Hospital, BMH, they called it. The interesting point was, as like in computer, rubbish in, rubbish out, so in camp, nothing in, nothing out. And one complained to the doctor, says, I haven't had any movement for 7 days. And we had a very humorous doctor. He turned around and says, next, and the record is 14 days. It got to the stage. Well, then, of course, we had 2 meals a day, a bowl of plain rice. But some meat came once a week. And they decided to boil and give each a ladle. They each made a piece of meat about the size of a postage stamp. But it was food. It was food. And the soup. The rice was a great help. It got to a stage when we were so hungry they weren't on the walls, there were no pictures of Betty Grable or anything. There was a picture of a hand. And everybody admired it.
Lincoln Kent.
The work parties began very early in the morning because they were following Tokyo time. Tokyo time is about an hour or two ahead of our time. I know that we assembled in darkness and we had to stretch our hands out, and our ISM would pass by. As they hit our hands, it would count us, because if there's a wrong count, he gets beaten up, and he does, and he makes quite sure that the number he reports is absolutely correct. Then we were marched out onto the trucks at the beginning, all the way to Kaita Airport, where we were engaged in cutting down the hill, filling earth trucks, pushing the trucks and to the edge of the water and dumping them into the sea to extend the runway of Kaita Airport for the Japanese fighter planes. The work parties lasted several months. And in the afternoons, in the evenings, work stopped at 5 o'clock. And we had to march back to camp. We were short of fuel. They stopped us up early because they wanted us to start work early. But when they stopped work at 5 o'clock, they didn't care what time we got back to camp. So we had to march away back to camp. Many of us realized that we did that too often. We'll have no more boots left, so they start walking bare feet. Others made clogs. But you could hear us coming from a long distance because we would sing to us to let the people know that we're there. And our families, those who were in Hong Kong and not in, would all come along, stand on the opposite side of the road, the far end of the road, to see us coming. And we would sing the old war songs, World War I songs. Yeah. Back up there. And all those tunes. And the Canadians would sing Alouette, and you can hear the Canadians coming. And we would pick up as one, if the Canadians stop singing Alouette, we will start. And when we stop, the Canadians will start as another French tune. You know? So until we reach back to Chantrey-Paul. That went on for a few months.
How long would that march have been, Arthur? How long do you think, in miles?
Miles? I think it's a good 3 or 4 miles. It's about 3 or 4 miles, I think. Roughly. To Chantrey-Paul.
How do you spell that, the name of the airfield? How do you spell the name of the airfield? Kai?
K-A-I, Kai, a separate word, T-A-K, Tech, Kai Tech.
And I suppose from the time you had arrived until 5 o'clock, had you been working all that time?
Yes, we work, we break at 12 noon, high 12. Before we leave, we go to the cookhouse to get our breakfast, and also we get a dollop of rice in our mess tin. That is our lunch. And at 12 noon, we stop and we eat that lunch. There's some boiled water in the corner of the field for us to drink. Most of it depends on our own water bottles. And some of the work, the Japanese also employed Chinese workmen the labour force. And they took pity on us and they gave us some of their food too. They, at first they didn't, afterwards they kept us separate, but at times they, there were certain locations where we could meet them.
Was the work very hard? Was it very hard work?
Well, we were young and our bodies were strong at that time. It was early on. So, but at the later stage, work was very hard because we had to carry rice bags and tins, and in our bodies were weakened with malnutrition and with starvation. And the heavy loads you had to carry was hard work. Bags of rice, bags of flour for the Japanese army. We even carried ammunition, loading ships and unloading ships.
Did you have to work every day?
Almost every day. We didn't work Sundays. And every now and then we stopped work. And then we stopped work for 3 or 4 days sometimes.
I suppose you would have been guarded all the time, were you, Arthur?
Yes, there were sentries watching over us all the time. And the sentries sometimes were rather rough. They didn't, their duty was to see that we are working all the time, and if they see us resting, they'll come and kick and punch us and slap so that nobody dares to stop working.
Were they all Japanese? Would the guards and sentries have been Japanese?
The guards were various. Sometimes they were Japanese, sometimes they were Koreans, sometimes they were Taiwanese. The Japanese were the best guards. The Koreans were the worst. The Koreans were vicious. A lot of our, in the camp, a lot of our people were doing business with the Japanese guard, with the guards, because they all want watches, and they would sell watches. We had traders in camp who would go around and ask people who were doing sell watches, and he'd bargain and get the best deal for them for a few hundred yen. We had a canteen in camp where you could buy. But it was very expensive. My wife sent me £10 and all I could buy to the Red Cross, and all I could buy in the canteen was a pound of rock salt. So that gives you an idea.
Because £10 in those days would be like £100 today.
Yes. And
was your wife interned, Arthur?
No.
You were saying your wife sent
no,
you money.
She went to work. They allow all people who are not engaged in enemy troops to leave Hong Kong. They encourage everybody to leave Hong Kong. They gave the Chinese a bag of rice as they leave Hong Kong. And we saw troops there marching, walking all the way from out of Hong Kong, going to China. Ships, they allowed ships to take families to Macau. And the families all went to Macau and lived as refugees in Macau.
How about your wife? Where did she live?
My wife went to Macau there. Her father was a retired Portuguese army officer, so she wasn't very badly off. And my office paid the salary to my wife, my full salary to my wife, every month that I was in the prison camp.